JT, live in Vegas.
Sound off like you got a pair. It's hockey, and the Vegas Golden Knights have advanced. They're rolling in the playoffs.
It's a sweep for Vegas.
The Golden Knights are still rolling with momentum in the postseason.
Shot, score!
The San Jose Sharks have been waiting a lot longer than the Vegas Knights to win the Cup.
Backhand on a big stop by Fleury.
With Fleury in goal, you always have a chance to win. Give me a Wild Bill goal, please.
He shoots, he scores! Hat-trick Carlson!
Can you imagine if this team, in their inaugural season, drinks from the cup?
And now, live from Las Vegas, here's JT the Brick.
JT with you out of the gate. Good to have you. Big show. More hockey, hockey, hockey. As I tweeted out, I feel like I live in Canada, not Las Vegas. Welcome to the show, brought to you by Golden Entertainment, the home of PT's, Sierra Gold, PT's Gold, the SG Bar, where I was for part of the loss last night in the new home of the Stratosphere. Hope everybody's doing well today. Going to get in a nice rhythm today. We have two play-by-play hockey guys and analysts. Dan Duva, the voice of the Knights, will join us here at the bottom of the hour. Shane Hendy a little bit later on in the show. We got baseball with Seth Everett. So fast-paced show. We're giving away, again, a certificate for an outdoor kitchen barbecue. For the best hockey call, so we're taking some hockey calls here so you can qualify for the grand drawing. I'll get into that in a little bit. 876-1340 is the number. We're not a podcast. We take calls. We'd love to hear from you rabid hockey fans. 876-1340 as we begin. And I'm pretty excited here because we got something that I love. Back against the wall, sports radio now. Back against the wall, potential trouble, and without a doubt, the first time in the history of this franchise, this inaugural expansion team, that they have issues in front of them that they better fix. In the regular season, we tried to stir it up a little bit when they're on a losing streak. If they lost back-to-back games, what was going on with the team if they lost in a blowout? There weren't many causes for concern in the regular season. I think we'd all agree on that. Now, after getting shut out in the second round of the postseason at San Jose and losing badly and being dominated, now something's got to flip quick. And home ice advantage is really important. They got it. They've got to build momentum. They got to get it going again. And for the first time in the history of the Vegas Golden Knights, there's real adversity. Real adversity. And how do you come out of this? What do you expect as a fan? The more emotional, the better, I think, on sports radio. And if you are that way, give us a call. Let us know. A tweet at JT the Brick. And how you win the series. Because if you're as good as your last game, the Vegas Golden Knights are not very good. If you're as good and looking at your last performance as the bar has been lowered. San Jose believes via coaching, even though Vegas is going to have the coach of the year in Gerard Gallant, they believe that they figured out the Vegas Golden Knights. And what they're doing is they're putting a stop sign at center ice. They're making the neutral zone very difficult to navigate through. Vegas is a good team, above average, when they're 5-on-5. When they're on the power play, they're better. Most teams are better. San Jose's great on the power play. And we'll get into that coming up with Dan Duva. But after watching and going to so many Knights games this year, you know that when this team gets an odd man rush, when they have an advantage, when they're able to use their speed to get through the zone, they are devastatingly good. When there's a stop sign and there's two guys who are 245 pounds with pads on saying, no, you're not getting through, then the next thing you know, they got to set up the offense. They become a little bit predictable. They ran into a hot goalie last night and, you know, a couple goals and the game is over. So should you be worried? I texted a couple of good buddies today. One's a Shark fan and said, what did it feel like last night? And he texted me back. I found it right here. You guys are done. We figured you out. And that's the perception up north, is that they figured out Vegas, the undersized, smaller team. Neil, Wild Bill, those guys, push them around, get them off the puck, and don't let them have any two-on-ones and we'll win the game. So Vegas now needs to circle, get behind this team, and really it's a test for the city. The city's been there for every tough test, right? From 1 October all the way through the season, whenever you ask these fans to step up, they do. It would be a shame to lose home ice advantage. So here's how we open the show. Is this a must win? Very simple. It's game five. It's not an elimination game. I believe it is a must win game. If the Knights win, I think they win the series probably in seven. If they lose this game, I don't see them coming back. I see them losing in San Jose because of how rabid that place is. Anything could happen. I'm no expert. I'd like to hear from you, especially the season ticket holders. 876-1340 on what has to happen Friday night, Game 5, Western Conference Semis, to get this team's mojo back and get them rolling again. Because, I mean, that game was over early. Once the Sharks took a two-goal lead in this game, it was pretty much done. You always hope that the Knights are going to come back, but it wasn't going to happen last night.
Speeding up the left side, it's Donskoy. Cuts into the zone. He shoots. He scores! With 5 seconds to go in the period, Jonas Donskoy back in the lineup and delivers the second goal for San Jose.
An absolute backbreaker. You have two defensemen in front of Fleury going backwards, skating backwards instead of coming forward at the puck. And Fleury was screened. He gave up a cheap goal. It's a weak goal. He doesn't stop that goal 9 out of 10 times. He stops that goal 99 out of 100 times. Once that happened with 5 seconds to go, game was over, and then the Sharks just poured it on.
Hodger controls after a Sharks faceoff. Went wraparound try, save, rebound, score! Wraparound, the name of the game for the Sharks. 3-0 San Jose, 5.5 minutes into the second period.
And it looked like they were going to lose, and I thought Fleury played great again. I mean, that could have been a 6-7-0 game. No doubt about it. Fleury still played great. I was surprised he was in the game with 5, 6, 7, 10 minutes to go, but it just shows you this team has no quit, and they thought they could come back from a 4-goal deficit, which wasn't going to happen. After the game, Gallant on the fact that they weren't as aggressive when it came to the forechecking.
We didn't get enough forecheck. We didn't get enough forecheck pressure on their D. They moved the puck real well, and they skated real well, and you know, for me, the bottom line was they were a little more competitive than we were tonight. We didn't play a bad game, but we didn't play hard enough to win.
Man, he is so good. He tells it just like it is. He doesn't hold anything back. Kind of at times vanilla, because he's never going to get emotional and give someone else something to put up on the bulletin board. But he tipped his cap to the Sharks. They played flat out better.
I think we played well enough to win all the first three. Tonight, no. And we didn't play bad tonight. They played their best game of the series in my mind tonight.
One of the strengths for Gallant all year long is he really does put games behind him. The losses, this team forgets about quite quickly.
You can't take it with you. We got, like I said, I've done it all year, and I'm not lying to you. Is we turn the page. The game's over. There's nothing we can do now. We got to get better. We'll watch some tape, and we'll talk to a few players and say, hey, we got to be better in these areas. And we'll show some pre-scout again for Friday night and get ready for that. And away we go.
I think coaching's going to have a lot to do with this. You know, when we talk to our experts coming up here in a little bit, anything could happen in a hockey game. You get an early penalty, you're in the penalty box, they score. I can't sit here and predict that. I can't predict the penalties. I can't predict the tip-in goals. I don't know what's going to happen. But I will tell you, with Fleury in goal, the Knights have an advantage coming back home.
You know, in good shape. We're 2-2. We're in it right now and going home. And you know, obviously, it sucks to lose that one. But we got to put it behind us quickly and move on to the next one.
No one wants this to end. This is for the economy. Another friend I talked to today in the entertainment business, in the beverage business out here. This is a 2-week changeover. If they win, there's another 2 weeks of hockey in Vegas, home and on the road. Great for the economy, great for the viewing parties, great for the casinos, great for the hotels, great for you and me. A couple of nights out that you don't plan on. Everything comes down to Game 5. And the last time in that building, devastating loss. That can't happen again. Nikki, start us off. You're on Fox Sports Radio. What's happening?
Hey, no, JT, you're great, just like the team is great. What I think, and I followed hockey a long time being a New York Islander fan years ago, I think that they better put Reeves in the lineup. We better start banging the defensemen on the forecheck. We have to put somebody out there like Reeves.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think you're right about one thing. It's got to be more physical. It's got to be more physical without penalties. That's tough to do in hockey. When you're sitting there and you're going, okay, look, we got to forecheck better. We got to be more physical. We got to do this and that. What happens is that at times brings along more penalties. You play outside your style of play, and there's a penalty or two. But this team's got to get going. They need to get that offense going. And the only way this offense can get going is either on the power play, or the ability to go out there and get them to play out of their game. San Jose looks really good right now. They do. They look like the better team. Tyler, you're on Fox. Hello, Tyler.
Hey, what's going on, guys? You know, with the game, of course it's a must-win game for the Golden Knights, but they've shown us all year that when it comes down to adversity and things they have to get done, they always get it done. I think our fan base is better. I think our home crowd is louder. I think our home advantage is better. So I think it's going to come in a huge play. Like you said earlier, they're going to win that thing in five. But we need a better effort for everybody as far as forechecking and intensity. But, I'm confident in them.
Thanks for the call. Fox Sports Radio is giving away a $5,000 outdoor kitchen from Galaxy Outdoor Kitchen and Jesse Ray's Barbecue. That call gets you in the grand prize drawing May 12th at Galaxy Outdoor Kitchen, located at 4425 Dean Martin Drive. So we'll move off the hockey, talk to one of the best baseball insiders in the business. Seth Everett, frequent contributor, is going to come here in a few moments, and we'll talk to him about everything that's happening. I want to get into baseball, reset this. And tonight, LeBron James and Cleveland off to a decent start. It's Toronto 61, Cleveland 58. This game's been a little bit more physical than game one. Toronto brought their A game tonight, and this is the same situation, really, that the Golden Knights are in when it comes to Toronto. Toronto's got a home game tonight. If they lose, this series is going to be over quick. I think the same could be said for the Vegas Golden Knights. They have to win. They can't lose back-to-back home games in the second round of the Western Conference Finals and expect to win in seven. They've got to use that home ice advantage to get a win. Let's talk baseball with one of our favorite baseball insiders. Seth Everett joins us at Seth_Everett. And Seth, I reached out to you the other day because I saw the stat, first time in baseball history, more strikeouts in a month than hits. There is cause for concern with that stat, right?
It's a crazy thing, and the numbers are backing up claims that, you know, people complain to me on social media about. I mean, the fact of the matter is that it is not a position of mine to hate baseball. I've been covering baseball for 24 years. But I am telling you that I had a personal experience in 2015. I lost Darrell Hamilton, my best friend, former big league outfielder. I thought it was personal for me when I said this game feels different. And so in 2017, I went out to start researching this. I talked to scouts. I talked to media members, play-by-play announcers, anybody who would listen. And everyone was saying that the focus had changed. I'll give you a crazy stat that a scout told me 2 weeks ago at Citizens Bank Park. You know the stat launch angle?
Mm-hmm.
They talk about launch angle now. Do you know that a hitter has been told by teams, both on the major and minor league level, that when you come to the batter's box, your priority is launch angle, not contact? When I heard that, contact is number two. But as long as the launch angle is right, so that if you're swinging and you hit a ground ball to short, you're not accomplishing the goal. The goal is to drive the ball, and you might as well just swing and miss. Well, when you see James Paxton have 16 strikeouts, that's a ho-hum, and that's not right. That's three shy of Randy Johnson's record, but when Randy Johnson did it, it was heroic. And it's not anymore.
I understand launch angle, but I'd like to talk more about launch angle with runners in scoring position or moving runners over when you need a guy to drive a baseball into the outfield to sacrifice himself. But I don't get it. If it's a leadoff hitter and it's starting a game there, and what's the concern about slapping the ball the other way, pulling the ball down the line, hitting it low, or hitting it high? I think you bring up an unbelievable point. The uppercut, the launch angle, and the amount of guys who are trying to make contact by driving the ball in the outfield.
It's an amazing thing. And, you know, I tell the story all the time about Billy Sample, you know, the outfielder from the 70s and 80s. He told me that in the 70s with the Texas Rangers, if you struck out, you had to carry your own bat back to the dugout. That's a fact. That's a documented fact. Now, in this era of pitch counts, if you have an 8 or 9 pitch at bat, even if the ninth pitch is a swinging strike three, that's considered a productive out because you burn 9 pitches from the other team. All of these things may work for a strategy, but isn't the goal of a sport to entertain? Last year, Jason Stark has this number, and this is not mine, but I will use his statistic because he said it to me on a podcast. Last year, the average amount of time between balls hit in play was 3 minutes and 45 seconds. That's a song.
Yeah.
That's the length of a song. And the reality of it is that you can talk about how games are 6 minutes shorter because there are less mound visits. And I'm not going to lie, that's probably a good thing. But if you want to talk about this sport and what it's hoped for is the future, I saw what the Oakland A's did about allowing 40,000 people in for free. I see what the Orioles are doing to try to get kids under 9 in for free. I understand the strategies. Cut out the damn strikeouts. You'll fix the whole thing.
Seth Everett is our guest. I agree. I think the strikeouts now are killing the game. But again, a lot of that also has to do with the strength of these unbelievable setup middle relievers, late game setup guys, and then the closers who come in and making all this money. I mean, these guys are getting strikeouts compared to 40 years ago when a tiring pitcher was starting the seventh and eighth inning.
Yeah, I mean, look, there's a different strategy. I mean, look at the Tampa Bay Rays. They're executing where what they're trying to do is only get 3 or 4 out of their starter and go 3-3-3, for a game. The problem with that is of the 13 pitchers on that Tampa Bay staff, and I mean this with all due respect, you know, 9 of them stink, so it's not going to give you the results that you're looking for, but it's a change in the philosophy. There's lots of changes in philosophy. It's why there's all these new young managers, because they are conduits of this front office mentality. These are all changes, but they're not good changes. And, you know, I think this sport has to look at their current business model is one of great thriving. But the union's upset with them because of all the changes. The league is upset. The fan base is skewing older and older and older. And, you know, it's things like this. And, again, I'll quote Stark because he said it when he gave me that number. This is, you know, baseball is a thinking man's game. But there needs to be more action to supplement the thinking. And now what you're starting to see is the strikeouts have overtaken base hits. What is the shortstop doing? And that's my favorite thing to do when I go to clubhouses these days is I find DJ LeMahieu and I find these guys, Villar with Milwaukee, I find these guys and I say, no one wants to go on the record and say this, but aren't you annoyed that you're standing out there for time and time and you're just standing there? And I understand the audience who's going to say, well, these guys are getting paid a boatload of money, so, you know, they can suck it up. That's fine. But there's an engagement that's missing. Yeah. Because it's too much standing around.
Wrapping it up with Baseball Insider Seth Everett. With the Corey Seager injury and the Dodgers 3 games under .500, second to last only to the Padres in the NL West, do they have to buy themselves out of that injury? A player like Manny Machado, is there someone else I'm not thinking about that can give them that type of play in the infield and some pop?
Well, Machado's going to go because if you look, there's like 6 teams in baseball that still don't have 10 wins yet. It's an eyesore. There's been a clear line of demarcation between the buyers and the sellers. Mm-hmm. So once these teams that are just kind of out of it, the Cincinnati's, the Kansas City's, the Baltimore's, once they recognize that, yeah, there's going to be shopping. I don't know that Seager can have that kind of an impact. It's not to belittle what Seager brings, but he's not the reason why that team can't win. That team can win without Corey Seager, but Manny Machado certainly helps.
And finally, for the Yankees to win 12 out of 13 and get back into this thing with the Red Sox, I know it's early, but every time I turn them on, they're either striking out or they're hitting a clutch home run or a double. Yep. And getting back into the game. Is it more the Yankees' bats or the pitching that has stabilized in the last 2 weeks?
Well, it's both. The thing about their pitching is I don't think their pitching is on the level of, for example, Houston or Boston.
Sure.
Over 162 games. But they have a lineup that can compensate for that. I think that when all is said and done, I think Boston's an overall better team. And I've been on record as saying that. I don't think I'm reinventing the wheel when I say that. But my attitude has been, for the Yankees to sustain this, they probably need a pitcher. I already heard one rumor about Cole Hamels. That's a fit. Because, again, you look at Texas. Texas is another one of these teams. I think they have more than 10 wins, but not much more than 10 wins. I think they're at like 11 or 12. And, you know, these teams that are out of it are starting to recognize they're out of it pretty darn soon.
Yeah, it's a shame because it'll get me back to my tanking debate that I go crazy on in the NBA.
And we can do this another time, but yeah. I don't think it's tanking. I do think there's a problem because there's no competitiveness. I think what's happening is teams are changing their philosophies on the fly. And this sabermetric revolution is starting to make it where some teams just didn't get on board in time, and they're paying the price for it.
Great talking to you. Always a pleasure having you on, Seth. Appreciate it.
You got it, my man.
Seth Everett, great baseball insider. Works the clubhouses, works the ballparks, and brings in great analysis like that. Hey, join me Cinco de Mayo at Poncho's. What a crew we got lined up. Kick off Cinco de Mayo with the Poncho's Happy Hour beginning at 11 a.m. Woo! Till 7. I'll be on the air from noon till 2. And from 2 to 3, we'll have a Q&A with Raider legends. The half-price select appetizers, the drink menu, $1.25 drafts, all the flavored margaritas. Join me at Poncho's this Saturday.
Yeah, I mean, you come on the road, and you're not always going to win every game on the road, but we won one, and we go back home and get the momentum from the crowd and definitely like our chances.
Marshall Show, confident, but maybe a little bit concerned. Welcome back. The Vegas Golden Knight flagship station, Fox Sports Radio. Shane Hindy, kind enough to join us, former NHLer and now part of the great broadcast team right here for the Vegas Golden Knights on the TV side. Shane, thanks a lot for doing this on short notice. Appreciate you coming on.
Yeah, no problem, guys.
A really tough loss last night, a dominant loss when it comes to the play of San Jose. What are the takeaways from you now that the series is tied at 2 coming off that loss?
Playoffs, man. It's it's very rare for a team to sweep. They're able to do it in the first series, but you look around the league, it's a game by game. Now it's a 3-game series. It's the way it goes. It's tough. It's a battle. I've been through playoffs a lot. That's you need to be able to wipe away the losses as well as the wins and get ready for that next game. So I think there's some areas they certainly needed to be better. They had some chances against the Sharks last game, but still some areas, I think, Gerard Gallant, like his team, to really tighten up their game.
How do you figure out what's happening in the neutral zone in regards to the physicality of San Jose and how the Knights can bust out of the neutral zone with some breaks, some two-on-one breaks? How difficult is that to game plan and try to fix halfway through a series?
Well, it's not difficult to game plan. It's a matter of executing. And I think, at times that's managing the puck and, Vegas, maybe some uncharacteristic giveaways. I thought their puck control just wasn't as sharp as it usually was last game. And you got to credit the Sharks. They've done a good job of really kind of shutting that area down. They understood after that first game when the Golden Knights blew them out that, speed is a big element of what Vegas has for success. And they just can't afford to turn the puck over, and they really need to try to control the neutral zones you mentioned. And, Sharks are executing their plan now. It's up to the Golden Knights to get a little quicker, I think. Back to moving their feet, maybe not trying to force plays, moving the pucks ahead with chip with speed, try and attack, put pucks behind the Sharks, force them to turn. And Vegas has always been very good when they can establish a solid forecheck and establish that speed game along the wall. But this is two fast teams, and it's one of those series that you might see come down to that seventh game if possible.
Shane Hindy's our guest, part of the Golden Knights broadcast team. Shane, what is the big difference that you've seen with the Sharks compared to the LA Kings? The size, the physicality, Burns on defense compared to what we saw with Kopitar and Carter in the first series overall. I just thought these two teams were bigger and a little bit stronger, but I didn't expect the Sharks to play that fast last night.
Yeah, the Sharks... I figure this would be a tougher matchup just because they have that speed element. They have guys like Donskoy and Couture and King, that Sorensen. They have a lot of speed on their team, which, matches up. I thought Anaheim and LA were two similar teams that have that size, like to play the physical, try to grind you down. And that's why I think San Jose and Vegas really had success against both LA and Anaheim is because they're very similar. And, you mentioned Burns. There's a big X factor for the San Jose Sharks. He's been excellent for them on the blue line. And this is a guy, who's the best defenseman in the league just a year ago. And he's looked dominant here. They weren't happy with that first loss and a couple overtime games. And then they were in control last game. But that said, I thought Martin Jones, their goaltender, was maybe their best player for San Jose. So Vegas needs to find a way to get those second and third chances. It just can't be Jones seeing the puck, first look, good save. They've got to jump on rebounds. And one thing we've seen from Vegas all year long is they're a team that really, has been able to bounce back from a tough loss or from adversity. And their team has built that throughout the year. And hopefully that's the case here as they try to get the home crowd behind them.
Shane Knight is our guest. He joins us part of the broadcast team for the Vegas Golden Knights. Shane, what's it like with Fleury at this point? You've been in the league a long time, had an outstanding career. You know how good this goaltender is, getting shut out. We know how Gallant puts these losses behind the team, but what about Fleury? What have you seen from him coming off losses like this?
Oh, I think exactly the same. You're talking of a guy that's, you know, possibly going to be a Hall of Fame goaltender, you know, three Stanley Cups. He's, you know, up there all-time wins. He's a guy that does, you don't get to that point unless you have the mental capacity to be able to play goaltender, which is a very isolated position on the ice. It's the last line of defense, and you have to have probably the shortest-term memory of anybody on the ice. And I think Marc-Andre Fleury is certainly, he's got the experience. He's got a lot of situations he can look back on and know what he did in that area and how to prepare himself for that next game. He's someone I'm not worried about. I think he's been an elite goaltender for a long time in the National Hockey League, and he understands these situations. I don't think there's a situation he hasn't been in, you know, in regular season or in playoffs. So he certainly has his experience he can draw on, and I expect him to be solid as they come back, as I do this team. You know, that's been the case for him, especially you know, having, back at T-Mobile, where the fans will certainly be behind them. I think a good start would really benefit them. But San Jose's played good hockey, and this is what playoffs is about. It's a tight, hard-fought battle, and hopefully Vegas brings their A-game.
Hey, Shane, finally, I watched so many games and so many broadcasts you were on this year, and, you know, you hear some coaches saying that home ice doesn't matter, that they, you know, they close out on the crowd. They said that up in San Jose. You hear that from Vegas, and you'll hear that from the Sharks as they come back to T-Mobile. Tell the fans why home ice matters so much and the impact that T-Mobile can have on Game 5.
Well, this is for the season that the Golden Knights are in. You play all season long to gain home ice. Why? Well, they're split through the first four games. So it's a three-game series, and two of those games are possibly in Vegas. So that gives them the advantage to play on your home ice. You look across the league, the majority of teams, their home record is always better than the road record for the majority of the situations. So that is why you play. That's why you want home ice. You want to try and take advantage of it early in the series. But if you don't, if you're split after four, you've still got the advantage. Or if you're split after six, well, then that last game is coming to your building. So, and you try to feed off the fans as much as you can. And I think it's been near impossible not to in T-Mobile, the way they get them going.
Thanks, Shane. See you out there. Appreciate you coming on.
All right. Thanks for having me.
Shane Knighty joining us from the broadcast team. Does a great job. AT&T Sportsnet, and the way I've been watching this, because I'm in the studio Friday night watching here on TV the first hour of the game, and when it was local coverage, before the national coverage, whatever, it's fantastic. The broadcast team, we got Dan Duva coming up next. They do a really good job explaining the sport, the intensity of it, and what these games mean. And now we're in that boat all together as a community here, and I think everybody gets it. You're not hearing anybody around the country saying, these fans in Vegas don't know what they're doing. They're amateur hockey fans. I think when they turn the TV on and see the opening and see all the towels and see this team and how loud they are, there is a tremendous amount of respect along the way. I'm fascinated by being a hockey fan most of my life on how you make adjustments. In baseball, if you got Kershaw pitching, okay, you know that Kershaw, you could hope that he goes six innings and doesn't give up a run. So maybe as an offense, you try to bunt the runner over, sacrifice, because you want a 2-0 lead. You think you can win it with Kershaw. In hockey, I don't know how that works. You don't know if there's going to be a cheap goal, a deflection, an early power play. How do you sit there going, well, we're going to get the edge because we're at home? The Sharks are saying, no, you're not. We just shut you out. We have the momentum. But Gerard Gallant has preached all year long that put the losses behind you. And he's done that because he's even keeled. You see these lunatic other coaches, John Tortorella, some of these other guys over the years, highly emotional. You don't see the emotion from Gallant with very highs and extremely low lows where the team is wondering if they're going to have to walk on eggshells. Not the case. He's like, hey, guys, we lost. Let's get on the plane, go home, and let's win. And they have to win two out of three. I think they have to. Obviously, I don't think they're going to win two in a row. I hope they do, but I think this is going seven, and it won't go seven unless they win game five. You lose game five, have to go into San Jose, that place is going to be a madhouse, and you don't want to see this young team be put in that situation. Trying to be positive, Bobby, because I want this thing to go. I want this thing to go another couple of weeks. Head on out to NEPTs and check out all the great promotions they have that go alongside the month of May, as long as the Vegas Golden Knights keep going. The Midnight to 2 happy hour is the best anywhere in town. 5 to 7, Midnight to 2 at all your favorite PTs.
It's over now. I mean, we're disappointed. We got to play better, but you know what? We're still in good position. We got that's 2 out of 3 starting with them Friday night again, and we got a home game Friday night, so I'm sure we'll be fired up and ready to go Friday night.
Head coach Gerard Gallant on the flagship right here of the Vegas Golden Knights, Fox Sports Radio. JT, back with you. Join me a Saturday, noon to 3 at Poncho's. Our great Cinco de Mayo remote. Raider Legends will be there. It's going to be a lot of fun. Tremendous time there. Poncho's right near downtown Summerlin, right next to where the Vegas Golden Knights practice. Their offices are. Come on out and join us for Cinco de Mayo. Dan Duver, kind enough to join us, the voice of the Vegas Golden Knights on Fox Sports Radio. We'll have him here in a few moments and get his vibe for what's going to happen there as he looks down on these games, calls a tremendous game, and when you get beat 4-0, there's nothing to build on other than saying goodbye to the tape and hoping that you come back to your home ice and you're a rested team with fresh legs and you get an early lead. I mean, that last game at home at T-Mobile, the loss in overtime, really was a difficult loss because of how great they played. They played good enough, and they could have won that game, stole that game. I still think they got screwed on that call by Toronto, but you live with it. You move on. They went on the Wild Bill goal in overtime to start the San Jose series up there, and then they get blown out. So to win 7-0 and then to lose 4-0, rare you see that in hockey. Two blowouts in a game 1-4. Everything pushing through to game 5 here. That game is Friday night at T-Mobile as we welcome Dan Duva, the voice of the Vegas Golden Knights. Dan, really disappointing loss because of the shutout and the fact that the Golden Knights couldn't get going. How'd you see it?
Yeah. Come out.
All right, that's not going to work. We got to get a better line from him if we can. We've been having a lot of issues with these phone lines coming in with a lot of cell phones, and hopefully we can get a better landline with him coming up here. And I want to make sure we talk to him considering what he knows about this team and the magnitude of this game coming up here. Underway, Pittsburgh and Washington. No score with 2:45 to go in the first period there. Washington leads that series 2-1, and they've been the better team. Dan is back, and Dan, disappointing. How do the Knights bounce back?
Well, it's a good question, and you wonder if there are going to be any lineup changes just to spark something. I can't say that anyone was particularly poor. No doubt the Sharks had all the intensity they could muster in game 4. Listen, even though it's not 3-0, 3-1 is still an almost impossible feat to overcome. The Sharks in their history had never come back from 3-1. They put everything out there, especially on home ice. The Golden Knights, an offense that provided just enough in the first round in a very tight-checking, slower series against the Kings. There's been a lot more offense here in round 2. You just wonder what Gerard Gallant that maybe move some things around if somebody goes in or out of the lineup, and if the lines themselves change. We don't know yet, but I wouldn't be surprised if there's some kind of tinkering before game 5.
You've called so many goals this year where there's a turnover at neutral ice, and then the Golden Knights go on an advantage, a 3-on-2 or a 2-on-1. The passing is so crisp. The chemistry is amazing. We didn't see that here. It looked like the bottle-up zone. It's a bottleneck there, neutral ice. How do they coach around that?
Yeah, I'm not sure if there is a way to coach around it, but no doubt the observation of coming out of their defensive zone is not as crisp. Sometimes it's just a matter of can they make a play, the crisp passing. You know, the overtime goal that was scored by William Karlsson the other day was born out of a defensive zone block. Jonathan Marchessault challenged Joe Pavelski, and then the Knights were sort of in the midst of a change. So when Marchessault made that outlet pass after the block, pass went to James Neal. And normally, Marchessault and Neal and Karlsson are not on the ice at the same time. It so happened that Neal drew the attention. He's normally the guy you'd want to watch when he's on the ice, but that left William Karlsson wide open down the right wing. You know, I thought Pete DeBoer made a smart adjustment in taking Paul Martin out of the lineup. You know, he's an older defenseman, certainly not fleet of foot. and you put in Ryan, who's much and much faster, and that, I think, allowed Pete DeBoer to do what the Knights have done with Gerard Gallant, and that is have some balance in the lines, balance in the defensive pairs. I think that it was an off night for the Golden Knights. They didn't play poorly, but it just wasn't enough. Remember that the Knights did hit a couple of pipes. Jones made some terrific saves. Grandy created some chances on a power play. Sometimes the puck just doesn't go in.
Dan Dubas, our guest, voice of the Vegas Golden Knights. A lot of important points coming forward as we get ready for Game 5 here. And your opinion on Marc-Andre Fleury and where his head is at. He's such a great veteran. He puts losses behind him. But getting shut out that way, and one of the goals, especially the second goal, with 5 seconds to go, very uncharacteristic of him.
Yeah, it's something that Marc-Andre Fleury has been through this so many times. If there was a moment where he was shaken, I didn't see it carry forward at all. He's bounced back from so many tough moments to go on to so many great moments. If you're going to be successful in this league over the long haul, you've got to be able to turn the page. And really, I don't think he played poorly. Again, it's just a bounce here and a bounce there. The second goal with 5 seconds left, want to give that up. It was sort of a weird one because you have two defensemen standing in front of you, and you'd think, okay, there's three Vegas people back, two defensemen and a goalie. How does one player beat those three? Well, sometimes there's too many people in the way, you don't see it well. So I think that Fleury has been outstanding. He has been facing more than the number of shots he typically does. It's over 40 shots in games 3 and 4, not quite as many in the last contest, but it seems to me that he is the confidence builder for this team. When he's doing well, it breeds confidence with the rest of the club. And I think that when the team hasn't done well, they often tell themselves, geez, we've got to up our game here because we owe it to Marc-Andre Fleury because of how well he's playing.
Wrapping it up with Dan Duva, the power play, if you can just give us the assessment, the strength of the Sharks on that power play with Thornton and Burns when he's anchoring that, and what the Vegas Golden Knights need to do to kind of get that power play going again in Game 5.
Yeah, first on the Sharks power play, when you've got so many offensive zone possessions and face-off wins, Joe Pavelski has been terrific,
yeah,
winning offensive zone draws. The Knights haven't done nearly as well in the face-offs as they typically do. And when Pavelski can win it out to Brent Burns at the point, Burns a couple of different things. He can either shoot the puck, and he's a big, heavy right-handed shot, or he can use his size and his speed to get deep, and that's how he scored one of the goals in Game 2, where he charged around behind the net. He's got options. When you've got Pavelski and you've got Couture, it's a lethal power play. The Knights, frankly, have done a very good job in keeping the Sharks off the board. A couple of power play goals here or there, but it really was a story of 5-on-5. The Knights were so good 5-on-5 until Game 4 in San Jose. The Sharks hadn't really done much 5-on-5 at all. You're thinking, okay, well, if the Knights can just stay out of the penalty box, well, they'll just be they'll be cruising. Turned out not to be. So when you think you've figured out the keys to winning, something happens, and it's a totally different contest the next time out. So that's why we're in the business of describing rather than predicting.
Dan, leave us on this note. What do you expect? What do we need to see in the first 5 minutes of Game 5?
I think that the identity of this team so early in the season that got them to a division championship was punch them in the teeth early. And if the Knights can do that, they'll get off and rolling. The confidence that they build for themselves, once they get moving, once they get rolling, it seems that everything falls into place. If they can find the right tweaks to the lineup to generate something early, punch the Sharks right in the teeth, you're going to have a few Sharks teeth to put on the mantle, that's for sure.
Thank you, Dan. Appreciate the time today. All the best.
Anytime.
You got it. Dan Duva, voice of your Vegas Golden Knights. It's tough. Again, we just had two guys on the broadcast tell us what has to happen here, and it's just predicting, not the obvious, but what this team does. You heard speed through both these interviews. Got to get the speed going again. How do you get the speed going again in hockey? You've got to have some odd man rushes. You've got to have the opportunity for one of these speedsters to come down the right or left side with no one on them, where they have open ice, where they can pick up momentum. And the Sharks just don't let you do that in the neutral zone. And quite frankly, the Kings didn't let you do that in the neutral zone, but that's why they were winning one-goal games, low-scoring games. We've had a couple of high-scoring games so far in this series. I think that's what we have to see back at T-Mobile, a couple of high-scoring games with Game 5 and hopefully Game 7 coming back here. Got to win Game 5 to have an opportunity at Game 7. can't lose game five, so you lose in game six. This is the moment where this hockey team has been waiting for adversity and to show the hockey world, not just Vegas, that they can bounce back from this. Because there are a lot of people out there going, hey, this is great. We've come this far no matter what happens. Next time you bump into someone at the bar or someone says it doesn't matter, we've come this far, say the hell with that. This is about drinking from the cup. You don't come this far. Ask San Jose how many times they've gotten this far and then they were eliminated and they have an off season and they don't drink from the cup. You rarely get this far in this sport. There are that many teams. You get this far and now you got to win. You got to play great, and they have to play great at T-Mobile. I expect them to do it. I thought this would be an easier series. I had the Golden Knights in six. Now I have them in seven. Move it back one, but it all depends on what happens here in Game 5. We're still qualifying people for that $5,000 outdoor kitchen. If you want to get through, 876-1340. LeBron and the Cavaliers up 11 in Toronto. Toronto is a hot mess. LeBron owns that city, that fan base. The NBA even warned Drake heading into the game tonight. How about Kanye and Drake making news in sports? What's the world coming to?
Donovan, left-hand dribble, teeth the defense, off-balance, right-hander short, got it back!
Oh,
big champion, oh my gosh!
Oh.
I've never seen anyone ever do that!
Oh. Holy cow!
It's the Jazz Radio Network. That Donovan Mitchell slam dunk last night was one of the more unique things I've ever seen. He came up short with the shot, and when he was in the air, he caught it and slam dunked it. He's being described as the next Kobe Bryant. Not the next LeBron James, but the next Kobe with his athletic ability, and that series is tied at one. It looks like the Warriors are going to be on cruise control, probably going to sweep New Orleans unless New Orleans puts up a fight at home. And Cleveland is up by 10 with 5 minutes to go in the third quarter, 85-75. Against Toronto in Toronto, and that team's a head case now. No score at the end of the first period between the Capitals and the Penguins. The Capitals lead that series 2-1. And a lot of people are now wondering, who would you like to see? You can't have that conversation now. Who would you like to play, Nashville or Ottawa? Of Winnipeg, excuse me, in the next round, and you can't say that anymore because now Vegas is in the fight of their lives against San Jose. If it was 3-1 coming back here, believe me, I'm going to be off a bunch next week. I'd be looking ahead. Now I'm not looking ahead. It's all about Friday night in Game 5. The big NFL story that I'll be getting into with Looney right here at the top of the hour is Matt Ryan now becomes the first football player, forget about quarterback, first football player ever to get $100 million guaranteed. This league has completely lost its mind. Matt Ryan, very good player. He'll earn $30 million a year. The deal includes $100 million in guarantees. He'll turn 33 coming up here on the 17th of May. He was entering the final year of his five-year deal, $103.75 million. So he's going to capture $103 million. He got all his money in his first contract, and now he's getting a new guaranteed $100 million. So here's the big takeaway. If you come into this league, the NFL, at the age of 21, 22, and start, which means you're going to play in your rookie contract the first 5 years, 4 years in the option, and then you get your first free agent contract. If you can play until you're the age of 35, 36, or Tom Brady at 40, you'll probably make from here going forward $200 million. $200 million. Now, if you're really good and if you play to your mid-30s, and that's tough. You know, you got to be healthy. Quarterbacks get hurt all the time. But now the story becomes Aaron Rodgers, that if Matt Ryan gets $100 million in guarantees, what is Aaron Rodgers going to make now along the way? So this is incredible. So I think Aaron Rodgers is probably going to make about $120 to $125 million guaranteed from the Green Bay Packers just because Matt Ryan's getting this. And it all started with your quarterback of the future, Derek Carr, who got the first big contract in free agency. Then it was Matthew Stafford. Now it's Matt Ryan. Incredible what's happening with this league. Incredible. And good for them. Make as much as you can. Hey, don't forget PTs. They also have great Cinco de Mayo specials that are running. For all the taverns, $3, $4, $5 specials on the 3rd, 4th, and 5th. $3 Dos Equis bottles, $4 tacos, and $5 Patron margaritas right there at PT's throughout the valley. Thanks to Bobby for joining us. Shane Knighty came in. We appreciate that. Obviously, the great Dan Duva and baseball insider Seth Everett. Looney joins me here at the top of the hour. We'll reset the scores and keep it rolling. Tomorrow, Friday night, the big one. Go, Knights, go.